What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball right here in Las Vegas at the Venetian Resort. Joining me to do just that is Scott Pianowski, Justin Boone, Dan Titus. Dan, you talking a little NBA here? What are we doing?
But I had to take the NBA hat off for a second. Talk about, it's football week, man. We're all drafting right now. What a better time to talk ball.
Boone, what's going on, buddy?
Man, very exciting time. I just can't wait for the season to get here, though. Like, we spend all offseason researching, going over all the stats, and then you get to a certain point in August where you're like, let's get some real games, some real meaningful games. I can't wait for that to start.
Scott, you know what I can't wait to see at the start of every football season is your first tweet when everybody in week one is taking a victory lap on, let's just say, Emeka Egbuka, and it gets out there from the Scott Pianowski handle. You know who liked Emeka Egbuka?
Everybody.
Thank you very much, buddy. It's good to see you again, man.
Great to see you. And, man, is this city gaga for the Raiders, right? I mean, I'm seeing Bo Jackson shirts. I'm seeing Darren Waller shirts. You know, everybody's wearing black. You know, I have not seen an Ashton Jeanty shirt yet. I'm sure they're out there. They're hot rookie.
They got it.
Hey, man, we got all night. I think we'll see a few Ashton Jeanty shirts.
Janikowski. There's going to be a Janikowski shirt somewhere, probably after midnight.
Yeah, that's definitely after me. I haven't thought about Janikowski in quite some
Never
time.
Never trust anybody whose name ends in Owski. It's probably a good rule.
Great
right there.
I definitely do not. Full disclosure before we get into today's show, this is being shot in Vegas. It was well before Labor Day. You remember our last show from Vegas. We taped that pretty much right after. So if there's anything here that looks a little out of date, just forgive us. You'll live with it. It's fine. Anyways, happy Labor Day. Because it's a special holiday, and this is the real pivot from draft season to the real season, we've got one last time to let some takes rip. So today it's our bold predictions show. Between all of us, we've got 12 bold predictions, three each if you can't do the math at home. And reminder, the rules on bold predictions are very, very clear. If we are way wrong, we cannot be held accountable, so don't come back here and tweet at Dan or Justin or Scott or certainly me and say, hey, you predicted this, that, and the other, and it wasn't even – No. That's not how bold predictions work. But if we're not even just accurate but in the neighborhood of getting it correct, we are allowed to take a victory lap. Scott, as a grizzled veteran, you know this to be true.
Yeah, for sure. You can take a year-long victory lap. You can dine out and that stuff. Like when I told you last year to ignore Anthony Richardson, take Jaden Daniels, the same guy 4 or 5 rounds later, yeah – I'm still dining in on that.
Hell yeah, you are, buddy, and you deserve it. All right, Boone, you get us started with your first bold prediction.
I'm excited. You brought out the voice. We talked about that voice and whether it was going to make an appearance on the show. There it was. I got to hear it.
I've been waiting to bring that voice out.
All right, tell me if this is bold enough. Nico Collins finishes as the wide receiver one overall. We've seen this guy the last two seasons put up phenomenal fantasy campaigns. Last year, before he got hurt, over the first 5 weeks, he was leading the league in receiving yards. He was doing that while playing with Stephon Diggs. He was doing that while playing with Tank Dell. He was the wide receiver 4 in fantasy points per game during that stretch, which I think people forget about because then he missed some time. When he came back, the numbers weren't quite as good. This year, those receivers are out of the picture. Diggs isn't there anymore. Tank Dell, we're not sure when he's going to come back from the injury. They have the rookies in Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel. Whether they're going to factor in right away or not, we're not too sure about because Xavier Hutchinson's kind of taking some playing time from them. So might be a slow rollout for those guys. Christian Kirk, a good compliment, a really nice receiver. The team loves him. They've dubbed him the slot demon. So they're definitely going to use him a whole bunch. But Tank Dell was a really good compliment a couple of years ago. And what happened 2 years ago when Dell was the wide receiver 16 in fantasy points per game? Collin was the wide receiver 6 overall. So, you know, he's been flirting with that elite group of receivers for a while here. I think this is the season when he finally comes through. The chemistry there with CJ Stroud is only getting better. And I mentioned this, we talked about this in a Rashee Rice take that I had, kind of going over what a guy could do even if he misses some time in the season. But last year, Nico Collins, he missed 5 full games. He missed the majority of 2 others, still topped 1,000 yards, still had 7 touchdowns, was the wide receiver 22 overall on the season, despite the fact that he missed all that time. What happens if he stays healthy for the whole year? What happens if he plays 17 games?
I mean, Scott, this is a Nico Collins podcast, and we've been talking about him as a guy we're excited about, ahead of consensus on for quite some time. And the proof is in the pudding, baby, because you go to some of these sources online, you know, Fantasy Pros does a consensus ADP, 4for4's got a tool as well. You know where Nico Collins is being drafted the highest? Right here at Yahoo freaking Fantasy. So, Scott, how do you feel about Nico Collins and his bold prediction?
I mean, he's a first-round pick. Any wide receiver you take in the first round should have wide receiver number one overall upside. I know he grades very well in reception, perception, and the metrics I care about, he grades well. And C.J. Stroud is going to be more like the C.J. Stroud we saw in his rookie year. Everything went wrong last year. Injuries, the offensive line collapsed. They had an offensive coordinator who was over his skis a little bit. I would like to draft Nico Collins proactively wherever I can, and he's going to be a foundational player. I mean, again, Yahoo is a very Nico Collins-friendly space. And so maybe in our rooms, you might have to be a little bit more aggressive. But, you know, if you're in a salary cap draft, go the extra bucks on Collins. I think you'll certainly be glad you did.
One other thing that I thought was intriguing, and Harmon's going to laugh that I'm bringing up this analyst again, but Ryan Heath of Fantasy Points, who's someone that I've mentioned a couple times.
Your best bro,
really,
right?
Really like his work. He had a phenomenal team in one of the mock drafts we did this summer. But he does an age curve study. And in that study, year five is when wide receivers put up their best seasons on average. In year five, they post 127.5% of their career baseline averages in PPR fantasy points per game. Nico Collins is going into year five here, so this could be that big year for him.
You know, that was definitely worth giving Ryan Heath some credit on that one. If it's pro Nico Collins, you can do whatever you want. Titus, do you have any reason to burst this Nico Collins bubble? Any skepticism about the Texans overall?
Yeah, I mean, their offensive line is pretty sketchy. And to be honest, like without Joe Mixon there to kind of set the tone, I mean, CJ Stroud's going to be running for his life, you know, throwing off his back foot. Yeah, they have a new offensive coordinator, but we haven't really seen how that's going to sync up. And to Justin's points about, you know, the wide receiver room, they brought in some rookies. It's pretty underwhelming. So I don't know if there's enough, you know, you can draw a lot of attention, like who's going to be the focal point of the offense. You're going to be looking to stop Nico Collins. So, you know, you see a lot of safety top coverage. You know, I think it could be a little bit more difficult, but I'm team pro Nico Collins. I would gladly take him, you know, at the end of the first round, early second, and have him be your, you know, your starting anchor wide receiver.
There's a chicken egg thing with when you have a receiver who's that separated from the rest of his teammates, right? The pro side is, oh, you get 10 targets off the bus. You can have 175 targets when the year ends. And then the con side is, oh, the defense is targeting him off the bus. They're going to bracket him. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. When a player is as talented as Collins, just give me all the opportunity. I'll make the rest of it work out.
Yeah, Nico Collins last 2 years, 3.0 yards per outrun, leads the NFL. You mentioned reception perception, 96th percentile success rate versus press. This is what really, I think, Boone, how you get this one right is if, and I've been talking about this in the offseason, if Nico Collins plays fewer snaps at X receiver, like, yeah, he can do it, 96th percentile success rate versus press. He can win at X receiver on a route-by-route basis. Again, 3.0 yards per outrun. He's been awesome playing there, but it becomes a lot more difficult to bracket that guy if you're moving him around the formation. Nick Kaley coming over from the Los Angeles Rams, that's what they do with their top receiver. They move them around. They get them those advantageous matchups. He's not going to go full Cooper Kupp and be like a power slot receiver, but if Jaden Higgins can take some of those sacrificial X receiver reps, if Christian Kirk can play a little bit more outside in two receiver sets, which is what he did in the preseason for them, there are ways to maximize an already great player. So listen, we're starting off the Bold Predictions show with some Nico Collins positivity. I'm all the way bought in. I'm fired up. Scotty, what goes up must also bring something down. You've got a player on the decline here.
Yeah, for sure. My bold prediction is Tyreek Hill is a disaster. I'm not saying a disappointment. I'm not saying an ADP loser. I'm saying a disaster.
I was going to say, give us a definition of what a disaster
right,
is.
Yes. Get out your thesaurus and use whatever word you want. But look, we want to bet on ascending players in fantasy. We've already seen Tyreek Hill's best season 2 years ago, who's unstoppable. Last year, what happened? Offensive line fell apart. Obviously, Tua got hurt. When he came back, they wanted to get the ball out of his hands really quickly. Tyreek Hill did not have a 30-yard catch after week one. Just mind-blowing to me. Now he's in his 30s. He's given me all the Antonio Brown vibes. You know, was the best receiver in football for a while. A little bit mercurial in the personality. At one point, it looks like Tyreek Hill wants out of Miami. Then he walks it all back. I could see them getting off a poor start. Maybe he tries to demand a trade. He's a little dinged up right now. May not be healthy in week one. This is round three ADP. And I know we talk about round three, it kind of gets hairy. You have to accept some warts. By round four, you're accepting players that have very tangible downsides. I get that. I want more ascending players on my roster. I'm not going to be proactive with Tyreek Hill. If he beats me, he beats me. But I think there's team suspends him risk. I think there's Tyreek Hill walks off the field, throws his helmet. Again, last year they couldn't unlock this offense. And the problems, the line, Tua, Mike McDaniel to an extent, they all exist. Now, if you want to draft a Miami receiver, I'll accept Jalen Waddle. I know he's approved by you, Matt. Don't draft Tyreek Hill this year. I think it could be a lookout below season.
Titus, do you have any reservations about kind of this is a guy that, I mean, the ceiling, we've seen it, like best receiver in football. Do you have any concerns that we're like full fading on a guy that we've seen that type of production from?
It's probably a bit of an overreaction. Like he's not a hard avoid for me. I think right now it's just the cost, you know, third round. We know what he can do at a peak level. He's not at that point. I think it's really just, you know, the Miami offense in general is just in shambles right now. Devon Achane is hurt. We don't know how Tua's going to look. Mike McDaniels is just making interesting comments throughout the offseason. I can't take Tyreek Hill off my draft board. Like, I think that's one of those values where you're drafting in your home league. Most people are going to probably know that they're sleepers, the risers, the Nico Collinses of the world. But I think that Tyreek Hill is going to be one of those guys that probably falls in your lap in like the fourth, maybe fifth round because of this overreaction of people being like, don't like the situation. He's declining. Antonio Brown, you know, similar attributes. I think you could actually get him at a good cost in your home leagues because people are doubting him so much. So I'm not totally out on him. Am I going to be reaching? Absolutely not. He's not the same guy he was, you know, a couple years ago.
Boone, what do you think?
I'm with Scott. I want to get out a year early rather than a year late on this one. It's not that there's one red flag. It's not that there's two red flags. There's like 100 red flags.
Yeah.
Normally in like the preseason, everything's good. It's all positive vibes. And the team's talking about how they're contenders. Tyreek Hill's going in front of the media and creating problems by saying the running back should be used differently. And then Mike McDaniel has to go in front of the media and answer those questions. It's so bizarre. On top of the fact, all the other issues you have with that team, you know, Tua Tagovailoa being a quarterback that has durability concerns behind what I think is going to be a bad offensive line. And if Tua goes down like he did last year, we saw what happens to this offense. Some of these guys are like barely usable, despite the fact that when he's healthy, last year they were at least up there and guys that you wanted in your lineup. So yes, it right now does not look like Tyreek Hill is going to be somebody that I'm going to have on very many teams.
I also call him a ticker risk, right? When you're watching sports and they have that scroll at the bottom. If there's Tyreek Hill news, it's always bad.
Yeah.
When's the last time you heard something good about Tyreek Hill? And again, this is unfortunately in the NFL, the career arcs are very consistent. You talked about Ryan Heath's analysis, and he's talked about when does the decline come? This is Ryan Heath podcast. When does the decline come for a receiver? It's right where Tyreek Hill is in his career. That's when those give backs start happening. You don't want 30-year-old players at the wide receiver position. So I think Justin probably said it the best. Be a year early on these players, not a year late.
Yeah, and like reception perception shows he definitely took a step back as an individual player. Could he still be useful? I still think he could be a usable player for sure, but what if, look, I'm not Mike McDaniel, and I'm kind of glad I'm not, because like you said, Titus, he said at one point this year, it's a great day because it's another day closer to death. Right. So, yeah, great vibes in Miami right now overall.
Very Joe Mazzulla vibes there.
Yeah, right. So I'm glad I'm not Mike McDaniel, but if I was, I would be trying to prioritize. You mentioned Jalen Waddle. Like, this is a guy they gave, at the time, top five wide receiver money to, $28 million a year. Coming off kind of a slower season because he was fourth in the pecking order behind the Tyreek Hill sort of layup targets, the Jonnu Smith targets, the Devon Achane PPR scam. Like, there was all that going on, and you kind of let Jalen Waddle kind of hang out to dry as the running the most difficult routes on the line of scrimmage against press coverage. If I was Mike McDaniel, I'd be trying to feed in and maximize that guy because that's the future of this team. I mean, we'll see if any of these guys are around after this year. It definitely looks like a little bit of a ticking time bomb. But yeah, when you say disaster, Scott, I do see the Antonio Brown shirtless waving off the
there
field
you go.
Type
I,
situation.
I want to say two more things. You mentioned Mike McDaniel. I bet he has that Star Wars shirt that you're wearing. And thanks to Omaj, who's been outfitting us with some of the stuff. I'm repping the Packers from those guys. Great stuff from them. And I love the PPR scam is getting said on just about every one of our programs now.
Oh, yeah.
That needs to be in the everybody on the tip of everybody's tongue.
Shout out to Hayden Winks and Josh Norris of Underdog Fantasy. They were the first ones to say it.
That.
And when they said it, it was just like, wow. Yes. It's so it was about Wandale Robinson, I think. And I mean, that is, a PPR.
Yeah, 99 low-calorie catches, right? Yeah.
You want to win with honor in fantasy football, not just starting Wandale Robinson and scamming in PPR. That's why we're a half PPR side, okay?
There we go.
We're winning with honor here at Yahoo Fantasy.
So Scotty, real quick, if Tyreek is on the board, where do you think is like fair value for him based on that you think he's going to just fall off a cliff?
Well, I got to be full disclosure. I was in a salary cap draft not long ago, $200 budget. He stopped at 14, and I said, well, I actually said out loud to myself, I could live with Tyreek Hill at 15. I went 15, crickets. He's my wide receiver 4. That was okay. Gettable, right? Yeah. This is a player who would have been $28, $30, $32, right. You know, in a different frame. So they say this is a price for everybody. Now, what did I do as soon as this league was over? I tried to trade him. I tried to
put him on the trade. Right. I know you guys love him in the draft, but right, what about
Been at 13? 14? Well, who was that?
Frank Schwab ended up with our great friend Frank Schwab ended up with Terry McLaurin in that league. And like, you know, I know Terry's got his own issues with the contract and all that, but I'm like, I just want to get out of the Tyreek Hill business. So what I'm going to do is if he has any kind of a bang up September, I'm going to try to move him. But there's a price for everybody. I'm just afraid. I go back to Boone's. You want to get a year early on these guys. And also, I just don't trust the line or Tua, right? He's not with elevating the things around him in this offense. We'll see if McDaniel can get his mojo back. But they wanted the ball out of Tua's hands so quickly last year. That kills the deep passing game.
At some point, too, again, that whole range of wide receivers is tough. We talked about this on the last show here from Vegas where – you know, it's Garrett Wilson, Marvin Harrison Jr. People are skeptical there. I would definitely prefer Harrison there because, again, I'm trying to get the guy on the come up. But, look, even if you have questions about Kenneth Walker, Chuba Hubbard, the great Alvin Kamara from that great Saints offense, you know, you might just want to go a different position in that range of the draft. Or take a quarterback. Jaden Daniels there. That's really where I've been liking to take the quarterbacks early. But, Titus, you've got a bold prediction for us here. Let's let it rip.
Yeah, so it's not going to be an indictment on Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's still an elite wide receiver, but I think Jameson Williams will outscore him this year in half PPR leagues.
I hate this
one. I know.
This like this personally offends me, but I'll let you make your
case. So let's go. All right. So big picture here, right? All right. If you're looking at Amon-Ra St. Brown, if you're looking at the Lions offense in general, they got a new offensive coordinator there. Everyone's kind of working with an equal playing field, right? But All I've been reading in the offseason is Jameson Williams has been, you know, making big plays. He's maturing. His route tree is expanding. Those are all the things, especially Mr. Reception Perception. You absolutely want to see that. He only had 58 receptions last year, but he still had 1,000 yards. I mean, he's just leaving so much opportunity for growth on the table. And looking at Amon-Ra St. Brown's numbers last year, you know, you want typically your alpha type, you know, top five wide receivers to have a 35% of the team's total receiving yards. That's where he was in 2023. In 2024, that dipped to 26%. Not a huge dip, but still a dip. And if you look at his first read targets in 2023, you know, that was, you know, somewhere in their neighborhood of what, 26%? That dipped slightly to 23%. So I look at Jameson Williams and his is going up. First read went up. And also his route participation. So I think this year is going to be the opportunity for him to really just make more of a stake in the offense. And also another thing that can kind of work against Amon-Ra is Jahmyr Gibbs. If he's going to be running more routes, that's going to be more spread out in the offense. Also, you have Sam Laporta still there. It's not that Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be bad. He's not. I just think that this offense could be spread out a little bit more. If that happens, we could see Jameson Williams take a little uptick. And he's used all over the field. And I think now, you know, he had 11 carries last year. There's a lot of ways that you can utilize him. Just an explosive player who is a deep play guy. And in half PPR specifically, you don't have to be as touchdown dependent. So I think this is going to be a good opportunity for Jameson Williams to be better than Amon-Ra.
I think there's some validity to a few of the things that you pointed out there. And that, yes, this offense is getting a little bit more spread out. They have so many playmakers. One thing that honestly like some of the Jameson Williams bros, which I guess I'm finding out that you're among this crew. And by the way, I like
Jameson. I did a lot of mocks in Jameson. So that's like the same area where you're seeing Tyreek get like that round 4-6. Yeah. Like I'd rather wait for that than a Tyreek Hill.
I'm totally with you there. We've been talking about that all summer, that don't take those like third, fourth round guys. Wait till the fifth round where, yeah, there's J-Mo. And like I have him ranked in a good range where you should be taking him. I'm not out on him at all. But one thing that the Jameson Williams bros have been pointing out, like, did you see, when J-Mo's talking about new offensive coordinator John Morton letting us like be more free, like there's a little more less rules, this you can kind of just run your routes up. I'm like, I actually don't know if I like that at all in this offense, and I actually don't know if I like that for Jameson Williams. Like Ben Johnson was so good about getting him like, hey, get to that depth and rip it inside and we're gonna hit you on that dig and you house that thing. So I don't know, I'm not out on the Lions offense generally, but I do think it's going to be more volatile. And if it's going to be more volatile, Amon-Ra St. Brown is such safety a Jared blanket. Goff wide receiver, you know?
Yeah.
Like this is the reason I've liked Amon-Ra St. Brown for so long. I was like, when I remember watching him in college, I was like, that's like Bud Light Cooper Kupp. And then he gets drafted by the bunch of former Rams guys in the front office, Jared Goff, former Cooper Kupp guy. Like, yeah, just to me, I feel like if there's going to be chaos, Scotty, that's just going to be more that's going to get drawn to St. Brown.
Yeah, you know, I don't know why people are talking down St. Brown. 119, 115 catches the last 2 years, double-digit touchdowns. And when people say, well, Ben Johnson left as a new coordinator, when you have a veteran quarterback and they have Jared Goff, he's quasi-offensive coordinator. Was Goff going to forget all the things that work with Amon-Ra St. Brown because Ben Johnson isn't there to call the play in the headset? I accept that Jameson Williams is a talent on the rise. I accept that it seems like he's more mature because in the last couple of years, the guy who's most likely to throw the ball at the official was Jameson Williams.
Yeah.
Or take a silly personal foul penalty or whatever. But
yeah. Just throw that ball.
So maturity is key. It's
yeah, maturity.
You got to see that growth.
I'm all for maturity here. But I just, when I see what Amon-Ra St. Brown does well, he's the drumbeat in this offense. He's got 100 catches in his back pocket with the chance to lead the NFL in receptions if things go right. The Lions were the best football offense last year. They'll probably regress to fourth or fifth or something like that. But I feel like Amon-Ra St. Brown, you can put right down 110, 1,210 right now as a very safe projection. I'm not saying Jameson Williams can't spike. I just think it's going to be very difficult unless St. Brown got hurt for J-Mo to beat him.
Boom. Also, Also, J-Mo, top 20 receiver, despite missing two games last year. I just think,
he can certainly do more with less. Like that is
sure.
He's the right
and being
archetype.
Efficient is that
he
matters.
He better be touchdown heavy though, because in half point PPR, he can't catch the 100 passes that the sun god can.
I like this take. The one sticking point for me is going back to Jared Goff. On top of the Ben Johnson thing and him leaving, they had like sort of like the wind at their backs last year with a very easy schedule for that passing game. It was a top 10 easy schedule. And remember, they had all these dome games. They only had to play outside three times last season. Their first outside game didn't come until like week 9 or something like that. This year, two of their first three are outside. Their schedule is the fifth hardest for that passing attack this year. So there's a few things adding up. The middle of the line now has some question marks with some of those guys leaving. It's another situation where I just see enough question marks that I don't think they're going to fall off a cliff, but I see that regression coming. And then it becomes like a math problem of who's going to have the stats here. And I don't know that Jameson Williams is going to be able to explode in that situation.
I want you to know that I live 20 minutes from Ford Field, and I have checked recently. There's still a roof on the stadium. So the home games will still be indoors.
Titus, just last word from you on this. Because remember, bold predictions, it's about getting in the neighborhood. So, you know, even if St. Brown, you know, is not outscored by Jameson Williams, you're still optimistic about him as a fantasy pick. Like, what's the right range for people to sort of get in on him?
Yeah, I think it's that ducking that round 3, round 4, maybe get him round 5. I'd be comfortable taking him as a wide receiver 2. If he happens to be a wide receiver 1, it might get a little bit sticky. But if you go heavy RB, that might have to be your solution.
Harmon, let me ask you a quick question here. We talked a lot of J-Mo, a lot of St. Brown. We mentioned Gibbs in passing, Goff. Sam Laporta broke football his rookie year, stepped back last year. What's kind of your view of how we handle Laporta this season?
Yeah, Laporta's a guy that just is always at the top of the queue when I'm in drafts, and I just never end up taking him because I think it is not necessarily a Laporta problem. I just think his ADP is in this like no man's land at tight end where he's not one of the big three. He's probably better than the Hockenson's and the Kelsey's and all that. But to Titus's optimism about Jameson Williams, like J-Mo came in there and dusted LaPorta last year. Like that was like, this is the thing. It's tough to be a top five tight end consistently, Boone, as we've talked about, if you're not the top, one of the top two guys on the team. And J-Mo just turned out to be such a dynamic force that they did move away from some of that LaPorta stuff.
So maybe that's part of the takeaway here is maybe Dan can be right where J-Mo steps up, but maybe it comes at more LaPorta's expense than it does at St. Brown's expense.
Well, the unfortunate reality for all these guys is that they're all going to be losing to the great Isaac Tesla. Because Tesla, man, he looks good out there in the preseason. They're having to run an X receiver routes after being a big slot at Arkansas. I'm pretty jacked up.
Great nickname too now. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, man, I love it. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, unfortunately, I do have to tell Justin Boone why his first bold prediction was wrong. Because someone else is going to finish as the wide receiver one overall. We'll get to that right after this quick break. All right, we are back. Let's get into some more bold predictions. I'll start it off with my first one here. Drake London is going to finish the season as the wide receiver one overall. And not only that, he's going to get the triple crown this year. That's right. We're going to see him back-to-back years. Jamar Chase did it last year. Drake London does it this season, leads the league in catches, yards, touchdown. I've personally bet this one, okay? Like, I have bet Drake London to lead the NFL in receiving yards this year. I just think he is such a great talent. I've talked about the role last year. He goes from being an exclusive boundary X receiver in Arthur Smith's offense to last year under Zach Robinson, career-high snaps in the slot, career-high off the line of scrimmage. He's used in motion. He's running these big in-breaking routes. Michael Penix, I'm like leaning optimistic on Michael Penix right now. I know there's always going to be some inaccuracy concerns. He's a little bit of a volatile guy, but did you not see those deep break outbreaking routes? Like, nobody's hit Drake London on those deep out routes throughout the course of his career. Michael Penix is willing to let it rip there. And I think there's going to be just year two of Zach Robinson, more wrinkles added in here, but this thing's going to flow through Drake London. 38.9% target share in the three games with Michael Penix last year. He's not going to do that, okay? But I think he can push for 30% because Darnell Mooney's banged up. Kyle Pitts is Kyle Pitts. Like, Ray McCloud is the number two receiver here if there's no Darnell Mooney. So a lot of upside for targets here for Drake London. And last point, I think we can all agree on this. We've seen that Falcons defense. We've not a lot of improvements coming on that side of the ball. So there's going to be some shootouts here in the pinball division, as you like to call it, Scott. How close do we think we can get this one?
I think we're probably all going to be in agreement here. And I'm sorry Charles McDonald isn't here because he's a big Atlanta guy. And I think
he would bring down our vibe. He's a skeptic. He's been hurt, you know.
What was it? 26 catches for London in the final three games. I think it was 38 targets. I know two of those games were overtime, so that skews the stats a little bit. But he's the first read off the bus. I think he's the favorite right now to lead the NFL in targets as far as I'm concerned. You mentioned the pinball carnival potential with this team, indoor schedule, right division, defense is still shaky. It's a concentrated tree, even if everybody's healthy, and maybe Mooney isn't healthy, right? Who's going to want to count on Kyle Pitts? And, you know, Zach Robinson, I'm so glad you mentioned him because it took him a while to get his feet wet last year. His first year calling the plays. And Kirk Cousins was limited. There's a lot of things you couldn't do with him. So now he's not limited anymore. He's been around the block. I think Penix could throw for 4,300 yards. I think this could be one of the, when we look back at the end of the season, what were the right answers? I think the Falcons might be one of those right answers. I think Drake London might be one of those right answers. And I'll put a very simple point on it. He's a perfect second round pick.
I love it. And look, I wouldn't normally come in here and say, hey, I'm going to do a bold prediction off a top 10 drafted wide receiver. But I've been trying to get this guy's ADP up all summer, Titus. I mean, like at one point he was going off the board 20th overall.
Insane.
Wide receiver, like 9-ish. Again, we got to pump those numbers up here. So it's we're Labor Day. It's right at the end. But man, this guy, I still feel like the upside is not credited enough here, Titus.
It's really not. I mean, as I'm thinking about the wide receivers at the back end of the first going into the second, you know, you got Nico Collins, Amon-Ra, Malik Nabers. But then you get to Brian Thomas Jr. But then you get Puka. See, I'll take Drake London over Puka at this point. And I think it's a lot for what you just said, Scotty, about like the mere targets that he's going to get. He saw 158 last year. I mean, he's going to compete for top three in that. And to Michael Penix. Like, I just think that I like those. I was actually thinking about making that my bold prediction, was that he's going to be, you know, 4,000 yard passer. Nice. So it's funny that you said 4,300. But I just think this offense is going to grow, and you have a rock solid, you know, running back in Bijan Robinson to kind of keep the defense honest. And, you know, to Matt's point, there's just not really that much target competition. Like, if Darnell Mooney's hurt and Ray McLeod, like, I don't think anyone's expecting him to make a huge splash in fantasy. So, yeah, I think this is wheels up for Drake London. And I don't know. I think we're going to have to see. He might be a turn pick for me.
I'm so glad you said that. If somebody wants to take Drake London in the first round, I have no problem.
I'm ranked 10th overall.
Yeah. I'm 12th overall.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, totally agree. And I mean, even not just looking at the Penix stuff, he got just decent quarterback play with Kirk Cousins there for most of the year and finishes the 5th overall receiver in fantasy points per game for the season. So if he gets Penix, if it is an upgrade on what Cousins was doing last year, there's a big, big ceiling here.
And if you listen to anything that the Falcons brass is selling right now, they are so bought in on Penix. I mean, almost like too much. Like, maybe you guys want to check yourself just a little bit, like give yourself a little room for error, but they're so bought in on him. And I think a lot of it comes down to what you just said there, Boone, that they got a relatively efficient, successful offense out of Kirk Cousins last year. And I think they believe that Penix can do more for them. Like, as a younger guy, you know, he's not like a scrambler or anything like that, but he's definitely got a more live arm. I think they want to get under center more, do more like deep play action stuff, which again is just going to be more Drake London. But Boone, you want to talk about a second year quarterback, not Michael Penix, but another guy that we've actually seen less of, Michael Penix.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard a lot of people talk about, I mean, we know Jaden Daniels is great. We've heard people talk about Drake May as a second-year guy that could break out this year, Caleb Williams. I think people need to talk more about J.J. McCarthy. My bold prediction here is J.J. McCarthy, a top five fantasy quarterback in 2025. All right,
that's all bold. All right, all right, that's bold.
Hey, the first one, I wasn't sure. This
the bold prediction for these cannot rip the sirens on that one.
That's like drug testing bold. Yeah.
All right, hear me out. We are talking about a guy, an early first round pick, a top 10 first round pick last year who missed the rookie season because he had an injury, no fault of his own. That first preseason game when he came out, he looked pretty good. I still think there was a chance that he would have gotten a chance to start at some point last year if he was healthy. He was not. And what happens? Sam Darnold, who had not had very much success in his career, comes into that Kevin O'Connell system and puts up QB1 numbers for fantasy and has this magical season. Sam Darnold, that's where this really comes down to. You look at what Kevin O'Connell has done for fantasy quarterbacks over the years, whether it was Darnold last year, whether it was Kirk Cousins in 2022, whether it was Kirk Cousins in the part of 2023 he played, whether it was Josh Dobbs when he was a starter for a bit in 2023, whether it was Nick Mullins. All these guys were top 15 fantasy quarterbacks on a per game basis when they were starting in this offense. J.J. McCarthy right now is like the QB19. Why on earth would the first round pick that they handpicked to be the long-term franchise quarterback here, why would this guy be going so late? Why would he not at least have the same success that those guys had, if not more? I think the ceiling is much higher. I think he is very talented. A little bit worried about the fact that the season could start slow with Jordan Addison suspended, with Jalen Naylor hurt. We'll see if they go out and actually make a trade and bring back maybe Adam Thielen, which has been rumored. Maybe we could get a veteran receiver to come in there and help for a little bit. But overall, this is a player with a ton of talent, a guy that I think can run a little more than people realize, with great coaching, an offensive line that's been upgraded, and I'm not saying he's the same player, and I'm not saying that he's going to have the same kind of season as this guy.
Oh, boy. I love that qualifier. You know what I'm going to say here? I can't wait to hear what you're going to say.
I remember another quarterback that did not play much during his rookie season. He only got out there for one start. He came back the next year. He had a great play caller. He had an elite wide receiver one. He had a very strong tight end. Patrick Mahomes had an incredible year that first season. I'm not saying McCarthy is going to throw for 50 touchdowns and 5,000 yards, but I'm saying there is a really, really big ceiling here in that environment for him. This guy's going to surprise a lot of people. I think he is a great fantasy pick, and you can get him for free at the end of draft.
I mean, stop the show. We're not going to get any. We're not going to get any better. Also, I mean, if the social media team hasn't put out, like, I'm not saying he's Patrick Mahomes, but from Justin Boone with the graphic there. I mean, that was elite stuff. Just one quick thing before I throw it to Scott, because I know you've got something. Your face is screaming. I've got something to say. Remember we pre-taped this. Maybe Adam Thielen's already on the Minnesota Vikings right now.
That is true.
That is worth saying there. But Scotty, let it rip, buddy.
I agree with the soul of what Justin had to say, right? I mean, I would follow Kevin O'Connell.
I agree with the soul.
I mean, I always say it. I would follow Kevin O'Connell into a burning building. He listed all these journeyman quarterbacks that O'Connell has gotten unbelievable production from. I'm just concerned when I look at the shape of this team. Great offensive line, defense I like, two running backs that we like, and we'll talk about one of them later on this show, that – the early part of the season is going to be like, let's get J.J. McCarthy some of those 18 for 25 games. Let's get him into pitcher counts. Let's not ask him to carry the show. He's not going to have his full complement of receivers right away. So it might be one of those wait for it. 6 weeks into the season, J.J. McCarthy's quarterback 17, quarterback 18, something like that. And maybe he picks up steam in the second half of the year, which is why I don't think he can get to maybe. It's supposed to be a bold prediction. I understand why Justin put it into the top five range. I just think it might be the second half of the year where you can really start him confidently. So, look, it's a deep quarterback pool this year. You can draft these guys in pairs. So you get McCarthy with somebody else you like. Maybe he's your first round guy. Maybe it's like the relay race where he's got the baton first and maybe McCarthy takes you home. I'm excited where the McCarthy story is headed. I just don't know that it's going to happen maybe the first third of the season.
I will say, to Boone's credit here, man, that environment is just so damn good in Minnesota. They're sixth in yards per attempt, the Minnesota Vikings, since 2022. Like, and it has been a carousel there. So the environment is good enough to do it. Top five fantasy quarterback, though, Titus, that is a big thing to ask here. Yeah, I mean, shoot, forget top five fantasy quarterback, just the next Patrick Mahomes. Right.
I think that was the hot take for real. Yeah, I mean, it's ambitious. I like the vision, but I think I would take Scotty's approach in terms of getting him as like a QB2. You want to invest in like a Drake May. You don't really know how he's going to work out. Maybe you get him as your backup. But I think one thing it's great that, you know, the laundry list of names that you ran off on who Kevin O'Connell has just made a decent, fancy, viable quarterback. It's got to bode well for J.J. McCarthy. And all the stuff I'm reading is that his IQ is great. You know, he's making quick reads. He's making the right plays. I do think that they're going to be leaning on the run a lot, but that doesn't mean that he can't cook also in the pass game. That's only going to open up, you know, opportunities for Justin Jefferson. And whenever Addison comes back and after three games, I think that's when we'll kind of see some realism to your
and Justin prediction. Pointed out the ADP is very reasonable. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, even if this is wrong, how much can it really hurt you?
Well, it's bold predictions. Even if J.J. McCarthy's good this year, Boone gets to take a victory lap. Those
tying into some of these points, I will say, too, they play the Bears in week one. The early season concerns with the receiver situation after behind Justin Jefferson. They play the Bears in week one, which on paper might not look the greatest, but Sam Darnold was the QB6 that week when they played at Chicago last year. So maybe could have some success there. Then he gets the Falcons and Bengals in weeks two and three. Those seems like spots that he could go off in, right? So if you're worried about those receivers early in the season, the matchups look like they could be pretty good for him to get out there hot. And then you said if it does start off slow, I believe their bye is in week six. So that might be a chance for him to regroup, figure out what they need to do different, and then for him to get even better after that.
I love that Justin's grinding the early part of the schedule, because I like to say that you play fantasy football with a microscope, not a telescope. These people are all like, oh, I'm going to win week 16. No. Win September,
right.
Week one, week two, week three. And so if you're going to be schedule driven, like, you know, when you're thinking of who is my DST I'm going to draft, who's got a good week one matchup? That's all I care about. I'm not thinking 3 months down the road. It's a snow globe league. So much is going to change. So I love that you were looking at the schedule that way, because I think that's an underserved part of fantasy strategy.
Yeah, no question. And man, I mean, my face is melted off from that take. But we'll try to regroup here. And I got to say, Scott, I'm throwing to you next here. Tough act to follow, but give us your next bold prediction.
Yeah,
buddy.
Well, you're repping the Packers. Thanks again to Homage for the great shirts today. And Tucker Kraft, if we had a Yahoo Fantasy Football magazine, I think Tucker Kraft would be on the cover, because everybody likes him.
Yeah.
McDonald likes him. Harmon likes him. Justin likes him, and you know, if Titus doesn't like him, we'll have to
kick
him off.
I guess I should like him.
We'll have to kick him, we'll have to kick him off the show.
You'll have to kick you out of here. Yeah.
I heard he has a basketball background. But my bold prediction is Tucker Kraft and Jake Ferguson are both going to be top five tight ends. With Kraft, you get more splash plays. They design a lot of screens for him. They design touchdown plays for him. He had the 14.1 yards per catch, a lot of yards after the catch. He can get downfield. Ferguson, a little bit more catch and fall, but look at the Dallas setup. Do we trust their running backs? Not really. Do we trust their defense? God, no. Dak Prescott, professional quarterback, two alpha receivers we're excited about, but I don't like the wideouts after that. I think Ferguson has room to be a big volume guy. Now, he hasn't been a big touchdown player. He didn't have any last year, but he had that 3-touchdown game in the playoffs against the Eagles. I think it's going to be a condensed passing game. I think Dak's going to throw for, I don't know, 4,500 yards. He was almost the MVP 2 years ago. Dak Prescott has a very high upside. There's carnival potential in Dallas. That means Prescott. That means CD. That means Pickens. It also means that Ferguson can have a smash season. And again, if you haven't caught on Tucker Kraft, if we've been pitching him to you for about 6 weeks now, I don't know what else to tell you. I think he's been the screaming tight end value all year. He's going to beat his ADP as well. So if you're not a vanity tight end guy, if you're not feeling it, with McBride, if you don't want to go with Bowers, you know, Kittle has to do it on lower volume, although his efficiency is usually dynamic. I think Ferguson and Kraft are excellent targets, and they both have top five potential at the position.
Titus, everybody that's listening to the show, watching it, has heard us three knuckleheads yap on and on and on and on and on about Tucker Kraft this year. So do you have a different perspective, any skepticism to offer here, or are you all in on Tucker Kraft?
Not really. Just look at the receiver room. I mean, everyone's hurt pretty much right now, and Matthew Golden's the golden boy. So, you know, someone's got to keep him honest in the seams, and I think that's going to be Tucker Kraft. And I think the reason I like Tucker Kraft, I'm not enamored with him by any means, but, like, where he's going, you know, 9th, 10th round, that's where I want to grab my tight end. Unless you're getting the top tier, you know, the top three tight ends, I'm usually out on everyone in between there. And I'm not really looking at tight end until we're getting to Tyler Warren, Tucker Kraft, Jake Ferguson, Colson Loveland. Like, that's the range where I'd probably be interested in getting a tight end. So Tucker Kraft falls right in there, and I think there's definitely some upside for him to be.
They call it the barbell approach. A lot of people do that at quarterback too. If you're not going to be early, be late, right? Don't go in the middle tier. Right now, don't draft like the Baker Mayfield. Wait for the Mace. Wait for the Caleb Williams. As maybe JJ McCarthy, as Justin was talking about. I think tight end makes a lot of sense there too. Where we talked earlier about LaPorta, right? If you're not going vanity, maybe you skip LaPorta. Maybe you skip Hockenson, because guys like this are really good targets. It's that barbell strategy.
And Boone, like, to kind of make the tight end quarterback analogy here, sometimes it's nice at the quarterback position to grab, like, two guys, like you said, you know, hey, Drake May, maybe get JJ McCarthy there if you're a little skeptical of May. We'll see what happens. I kind of like Jake Ferguson as that guy that if you're taking a Colson Loveland, you want to grab him later. Get Jake Ferguson because it's kind of a known commodity, but I feel like this is a guy we haven't really talked about very much this preseason because it has been the Tucker Kraft show. It's been these two rookies, Warren and Loveland. Like, how do you feel about Ferguson this year?
Not really in on Ferguson this season, and it just goes back to that thing that we talk about where if I'm looking for that late round tight end, I'm looking for a guy who I think has a chance to be a top two target getter in the offense. And with George Pickens there now, we have a legitimate second receiver there. They could throw a ton. That Cowboys defense, I think this team is going back to what it was a couple of years ago when Dak did throw the ball around the yard. So Ferguson will have some games, but I think the Pickens presence really caps his upside, and it's going to make him a guy that I'm just not that interested. I mean, we've seen this happen to other guys. Dalton Schultz in Houston, right? Dalton Schultz, even going back to when he's with Dallas, he's had some good fantasy seasons. He ends up on a Texans offense where they've had good receiver play, and he's become like an afterthought, right? He's just not getting enough targets. I worry about that for Ferguson. He'll have some good games, but I want to take shots on guys that I think have a higher ceiling. Somebody like Chigakonkwo, for example, last year down the stretch, he was, you know, playing a ton. His numbers really spiked. Could we see him come out this year and maybe show us that ceiling? I'm looking at guys like that, or even the rookies like Mason Taylor or even Elijah Arroyo, though Arroyo not quite
Theo
as
much. Theo Johnson's another name I really
Theo
like.
Theo Johnson. Like, there's some guys down there that I think have almost, you know, an equal amount of fantasy value and could potentially even have better seasons than Ferguson, and they're going way cheaper. So I haven't been getting a lot of them.
I want to say I am a big Chigakonkwo guy, and I think might mitigate part of that reasonable point from Boone is that I think Dallas has lead the NFL in pass attempts upside. And after Lamb and after Pickens, and they're going to get targeted through the roof, there's not another receiver on this roster I feel good about.
Yeah, they're talking about like Kevontae Turpin.
Forget it.
Kind of, yeah.
That was
good return, man.
Really dismissive of Kevontae Turpin. I wasn't even through the sentence. Scotty, forget it. So, well, on that note, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, we have more bold predictions to run through. We'll get to those right after this. All right, we are back. We are continuing to run through our bold predictions here for the 2025 fantasy football season. Dan Titus, you've got another one here. Let's hear it.
Well, thanks for Mr. Boone for bringing out the Minnesota Vikings love with J.J. McCarthy. I'm going to go with Jordan Mason finishing as a top 15 back. But since I got to add a little bit more of a hedge here, I'm also going to go Zach Charbonnet to also be top 15.
That's not a hedge. That's making this harder to get right here.
I don't think so.
You're doubling up.
I'm gonna double it up. I got to double it up here. So start with Aaron Jones first. Jordan Mason first. Aaron Jones, going to be 31 in December. Not young. I think if you're looking at much of the beat writers were talking about Jordan Mason being a co-RB1. And after what he did in San Francisco, you know, subbing in for Christian McCaffrey, that we got a good sample of what he can do as a workhorse back. Not really a pass catcher, but that's where Aaron Jones really thrives. So I think eventually, you know, as this season kind of wears on, we have the easy schedule, you know, the first three games of the season. I think we could actually see Jordan Mason take and cede some of those carries from Aaron Jones early on, because you want to preserve Aaron Jones for the long haul, right? And the first seven games that he had, that Mason was with San Francisco, averaged 107 scrimmage yards, 15 fantasy points per game. Behind a top five offensive line, I think this is an opportunity for you to get a running back, very cheap, you know, zero RB strategy if you want. To build your RB depth that can eventually become, you know, a rock solid RB2, potentially RB1 upside here. Similarly, Zach Charbonnet, same thing. Kenneth Walker's just always banged up. You can't trust him. I love him. Great talent. Awesome opportunity in Seattle. But if you look at Zach Charbonnet's numbers, every time he steps on the field, he produces 94 and a half scrimmage yards per game in eight games that Walker's been sidelined, scored seven TDs in those eight games. At cost, that's just someone you have to get on your fantasy team. Those are like the top two backup running backs that I would target that could have easily RB1 upside. And I think, you know, Aaron Jones at the age, and you look at Kenneth Walker in the injury history, they're going to both have opportunities to get a lot of work this year. Top 15.
I mean, Scotty, these are two of your guys. I feel like you and Titus are about to like hold hands and skip and do laps around the poker room out here.
Yeah, although I will admit, and we talked on the previous show, that as the ADPs between Mason and Jones have gotten closer, that I've actually been more open-minded to maybe Mason being the sneaky, boring, everybody's sick of drafting him value. He did play 17 games last year. He got 2 years, $20 million, so they're paying him more than Mason. But love the infrastructure there. Love the offensive line. We talk about Kevin O'Connell. He can scheme up offense. And I would like to have Mason shares for sure. The thing with Charbonnet, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I'm not convinced Kenneth Walker's better than Zach Charbonnet. Zach Charbonnet had better efficiency stats last year. He had more touchdowns on fewer touches. Clint Kubiak from the Shanahan tree knows how to design a running game. So many moving parts here. New quarterback, new coach, all these new receivers. So I'm not really sure what Seattle's going to be. I think Walker and Charbonnet both play a lot in September. It's a hot hand situation. I think Charbonnet has a chance to steal the job outright. Maybe Walker falls into injury concerns again. We know last year was a very clean injury runout season. That's not going to happen again in the NFL. So Charbonnet is maybe more proactive for me than Mason, only because Mason's become such a helium player in the spring, but in the summer, I should say. But bottom line is this: your roster, middle of a draft, you get to think to yourself, upside. What running back could I take who could blast his ADP, who could be, I hate to say league winner, but league tilter, somebody who I draft maybe as a bench player who 5 weeks into the season, I'm playing this guy every week, no questions asked. And I think both of the guys that Dan outlined are players we can target in that vein.
Boone?
I mean, there's a lot of paths to this coming true for sure, not just the injury one. Like, both these guys are talented backs. I will say, I do think, and I don't want to speak negatively about either of them because I really like Zach Charbonnet, but I do think fantasy managers are wish casting just a little bit when it comes to Charbonnet, because he's been so good and this player that they've gotten cheap And when he's in there, immediately puts up these RB1 stats that I think we all want to see him in a starting role somewhere. And we're hoping that it could happen on the team that he's on right now, because it doesn't look like he's getting traded. And yet I still think Kenneth Walker is ahead of him. And I think when Kenneth Walker gets out there and ends up with the giant holes that these guys were running through in the preseason, Kenneth Walker is a big play running back. He is going to put up big stats. So I'm not that worried, barring injury, that Charbonnet is going to take over that job. But I do think strategy-wise for fantasy drafts this year, we talked about like the way you can draft where you can, you know, grab a receiver, running back early, look at elite tight end or quarterback, hit that range of receivers from like round 5 to round 7, and then start looking at these guys. Then start looking at these running backs that have these really high ceilings that are guaranteed good players that could potentially be flex plays while also having that top 12 upside. I think it's a really smart way to draft.
Yeah, you make a great point about that, where anytime you can take an upside running back who also could have that what the heck flex standalone value, right? Sig Bloom, right? So guys that you might be playing during...
Flex with benefits.
Right, for sure. Might be playing them during bye week season. Might be playing them when you get an injury pinch. So it's not just stash and hope. It's not just, oh, he's on my bench, but somebody needs to get hurt or this guy is worthless, right? These guys may actually be flex players for you in the medium and deeper league streets. So it makes it much more just acceptable to roster them. And you're going to, and you know, the names could differ. You, some of us may be Mason guys. Some of us may be Charbonnet guys. There are other players around the league that fit, depending how you feel about the Pittsburgh guys, you know, but you're going to have whoever your guys are, you're going to find 5 or 6 names in that bucket. You want to draft a couple of them for your roster.
Titus, just to round this out here, I'm very confident that the Vikings offense will be one of those where, like, yeah, that flex with benefits player, if that's all Mason ends up being, I think I can see that there, because they've invested in the offensive line. And it's, I just talked about earlier, it's a really, really damn good environment. How good do we think this Seahawks offense is going to be this year?
The funny thing is, as I was doing this bold prediction, like when I was mock drafting all last week, I got Kenneth Walker on so many teams just because he's that like third, fourth round guy that's just there for me.
And the ceiling's there.
And it is.
Like, if he stays healthy, the ceiling is there.
It absolutely is. And I think I do have faith in just the Seattle offense. Like, I love Jackson Smith and Jigba in the third round there. I don't know. People are down on Sam Darnold just because he's like that boring quarterback. But like, I think he's enough. He's enough of a game manager to make things happen for fantasy managers. And, you know, I think this NFC West division is pretty interesting. I don't know where I really feel about the San Francisco 49ers and the Rams. You know, Matt Stafford's back is hurting. I think Seattle could actually surprise people. So I'm actually, those are the guys that I would obviously target. I don't really know about the skill positions beyond that. I mean, there's probably a deep, you know, Horton's a deep sleeper.
Torrey Horton, baby.
That you could probably go. But I think you could feel pretty confident going with Kenneth Walker, Jackson Smith and Jigba, and Zach Charbonnet as the insurance.
I would say the NFC West is a division where all four teams have the most reasonable chance to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very, very up in the air division to me. So I like that take a lot. All right. I'll give my second one here. And that is that Bryce Young is going to be a quarterback one this year.
Whoa.
The quarterback one?
Whoa.
No, not the quarterback one. Top 12.
Top 12.
Top 10. Whatever makes this. I don't care. It's a bold prediction episode. Whatever is easier to sell.
MVP candidate.
Okay. I'm not going full Boone over here.
Super Bowl.
Like,
never go full Boone.
Yeah. Correct.
I'm having fun with you, but I actually love this. Go ahead.
No, yeah. So anyway, so Bryce Young last year from week 10 on, when he got back in the lineup, was QB 11 in half PPR fantasy points. The thing that people do not realize there, the biggest thing that was different in his game, not just the confidence that he was throwing with, like really letting it rip in the intermediate area. Yep. He was fifth in scramble like yards from quarterbacks. It was Jaden Daniels, Justin Herbert, which is interesting, Caleb Williams, your boy Josh Allen, Boone, and then Bryce Young, right ahead of Drake May. Like, everybody's gassed up about Drake May because of the rushing upside. Bryce Young from week 10 on, once he was back in the lineup, he was so decisive. It wasn't there. He just gets out of the pocket. It's not there. I'm just taking off and like making positive plays.
Running for touchdowns too.
And man, I just look at this Panthers offense right now. I'm really excited about this receiver room. Jalen Coker, obviously the number one guy. No, but in a serious note, Tetero McMillan, you know, getting him in there and immediately just slotting everybody else into the right spots. Coker as that growing big slot receiver. Xavier Legette moving around the formation more. The offensive line is good. Like, they're really good in the run game, and they're solid in pass protection as well. And the run game last year was top 12 throughout the course of the season in EPA per rush. Like, this was a good offensive environment last year. Once Bryce Young got his confidence back, he reaped the rewards of that environment. I just feel like he goes so late in drafts because there's the second-year quarterbacks, the McCarthys, the Penixes that people are excited about. You know, Trevor Lawrence, people believe in the bounce back there. But if I'm looking for a super flex QB too, Bryce Young is one of my favorite targets if I miss out on like a Drake May.
I write a breakout series at every position and a sleeper series, right? And I looked at the ADPs, and I think based on where he's going, I easily could have put him in the sleeper one. And yet I felt so confident about it, I just put him right in the breakout one. I think it's going to happen. We saw last year, like you're saying, the Dave Canales magic. It took a little while, but it finally happened for him. And we've seen Canales do it with these other quarterbacks, more veteran guys. When he went to Carolina, we thought, could he potentially turn things around for Bryce Young? He's done it. And now they have the weapons around him. Like you said, the rushing ability, it's all there. He definitely has top 12 upside this season.
Titus, you said, whoa, so skeptical on this one.
No, I don't know if I'm skeptical as I'm looking at the current ADP. You know, QB12, you're looking at Justin Fields, Jared Goff, Justin Herbert, Caleb Williams, Drake May. I think, you know, based off of the assets that they got over in the offseason, the offensive line, their defense is solid. In a pretty underwhelming division, like it's pretty much been Tampa Bay's division for the last few years. So, I don't know, you get to play the Saints twice every year.
Bryce you Young, get to play that Falcons defense yeah, twice, you know, like that Bucks defense
Bryce
twice.
Bryce Young could put up some numbers here. Right now he's QB23. Yeah, I mean, I could see the leap to QB12. Like, he could be one of those guys, like, obviously, if you have a bye week or, you know, you want to take, you know, a Drake May or Jordan Love or something like that, want some insurance, take Bryce Young. He could be a matchup play in certain conditions.
Last year, after the Panthers week 11 bye, the ninth most fantasy points among quarterbacks over the final 7 weeks, Bryce Young. So he's already shown us, small sample size, he's already shown us there's a ceiling there that I don't even think I thought was possible for him until we saw him do it last season. So yeah. I certainly think he could get up there again.
I think there are two really important things for Young to make this happen. One, the rushing last year down the stretch, especially the rushing touchdowns.
Right.
Is that sticky? Is that repeatable? Because maybe he's handy as a scrambler, but he runs for one or two touchdowns. I mean, he was running for a touchdown almost every week, it felt like, over that stretch. And also, is Tet McMillan, is he like a Brian Thomas right out of the way? I mean, number eight pick, obviously you have high expectations. This is a room where he slots as their number one guy right away. I think we all like McMillan, but is McMillan more like Harrison was rookie year, good but not great? Or is it a Brian Thomas type of rookie year where he takes the league by storm? Those two things will determine whether or not Young is just, okay, he's nice super flex depth. I'm glad I had him. I needed him every once in a while. Or he's actually a proactive play and he meets his projection. But, you know, the bottom line is when last year started, I was a Harvard guy, but it looked like a dead offense. And I'm just so glad that Canales is the right answer. Bryce Young has a chance now. Remember last year, it was like, oh, C.J. Stroud's great, and ha-ha, the Panthers
took
Bryce Young.
Those idiots took Bryce Young.
It's just nice to see Bryce Young get his feet wet, belong in the NFL, and improve as a player. So Carolina, to me, I could see it. At the end of the year, we could say, hey, they had a lot of ADP winners on this offense, but it's going to come down to how good Young is, and I think how sticky the rushing production is.
It's just a reminder that environment is so important for quarterbacks.
For sure.
Like, quarterbacks are they fail much less often than they are failed. And it looked like, I mean, Frank Reich even gave a quote recently where he's like, yeah, some of the offensive design like didn't really work for Brett. Like, no kidding, Frank. Like, yeah, that was a pretty rough situation in year one. Year two, things get a lot better. Yeah. So it's
now go
good.
Sit next to Doug Peterson, who failed Trevor Lawrence. Yeah, and right. Urban Meyer, who failed Trevor Lawrence.
One young quarterback who has not failed was Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills. And our resident Bills homer has a bold prediction about that particular team. Let's hear it.
Yeah, if you guys were stunned by the last one, you guys are going to hate me for this one. I normally do not go all in homer style, but
sure,
we are in Vegas. This is where dreams come true, right? So bear with me. We're going to play out a scenario where my dream comes true, all right? The Buffalo Bills win the Super Bowl, but that's not that bold. They win the Super Bowl based on the breakouts of Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid this year, two players that I think a lot of people have already maybe written off or given up on. They are still very, very young players, all right? We have two guys here that, You know, I see you laughing over there already.
Colin is Colin just said roast him in my ear. Like,
and I'm so sure mean. You will, but hear me out first. All right. Keon Coleman, 22 years old. You know, Dalton Kincaid, 25 years old. Coleman going into his second season. Kincaid into his third season. You know, second season for a receiver. He hasn't had that much time to get his feet wet here. I've talked before about when he showed up last year in Buffalo. He was clearly a player that was going to need to figure out how to win in the pros. And just based on talent alone, he started putting up some stats right away, had at least 50 yards or a touchdown in most of the games, the first five games of the season, I believe. Then, right before he got hurt, he was coming on, had 125 yards in week seven, had 4 for 70 and a touchdown in week eight. Then the injury week nine totally derails the season. When he comes back, not really the same player. But this offseason, everybody in Buffalo, including his teammates, Deion Dawkins recently just went in front of the media and said to everybody, this is not the same player that he was before. It is night and day. I see everyone at their computers just getting fired up, just putting it in the holster, getting ready to come back.
Load up, baby.
But not every player is Malik Nabers or Brock Bowers and comes into the league and blows up right away, right? So Coleman can be a guy that I think could put up double-digit touchdowns. He's that kind of player. Obviously, they really like what he's doing there based on whatever what he's saying. Khalil Shakir, injured right now. High ankle sprain. Might not be there in week one. Josh Palmer was somebody who dealt with injuries in the preseason as well. This is all just pointing towards Keon Coleman having an opportunity to establish himself as what they wanted him to be when they drafted him, a number one guy in that offense. And then we have to go to Dalton Kincaid. And this is one where I think Dalton Kincaid even more than Coleman. Maybe some people are still in on Coleman. Dalton Kincaid, I think everybody's out on. He burned so many people for fantasy, and I will apologize. Some of that is my fault because I did recommend him last year as a breakout candidate.
But you're back, baby.
But I am back. I have bought in again, and part of it is Shakir not being there, and I think that Kincaid could win a little bit more early in the season in that area of the field where Shakir was taking a lot of volume before. But you look at what he did. Both of his first two seasons, he was second on the Bills in targets. What do we talk about when we're looking at late round tight ends? A guy who could be second or first in targets on his team. He's shown that he can be that. Now, he's dealt with injuries. Last year, he got banged up, sprained his PCL. But before that, he was on pace for 102 targets. There were not many tight ends that went over 100 targets last year. Bowers, McBride, Kelsey, and Jonnu Smith. Pretty good company there. Even as a rookie, 91 targets over the final 12 weeks of that rookie season. He was the tight end 11 in fantasy points per game. So he showed us, I like when players can show me that they can do it over a short stretch. That gives me some faith because one of the most predictive things in fantasy is fantasy points scored in a previous season. It's weird that that's what it is. But when people are asking, what's the stat to look at? Sadly, that one is it, right? So I think both these guys are going to come on. They're so young. It's a great culture in Buffalo. They know how to build up these young players. And these guys didn't do it right away. And fantasy managers got burned by them. So I think they're out on them. And the ADPs are so late right now. But these two guys are going to have breakouts. We're going to see Coleman be at least a top 30 fantasy receiver. Kincaid is going to be a top 10 fantasy tight end. This offense is just going to hit another level because Josh Allen is Superman. Now he's actually going to have these young weapons around him coming up and elevating them to another level and all the way to a Lombardi Trophy.
I mean, it's a pretty good case. Like, that was well laid out. I will say, though, the only thing I got to point out as a tough spot for you there, Boone, when you start the argument with a player's age, you know you're already, like, you're swimming upstream. You're trying to dig yourself out of a hole. Nobody has ever, like... Yeah, it's like, hey, this guy's only 22. It's like Kyle Pitts is still only 23 years old. Like, but anyways, I do think there is some, the one thing I was actually looking up was actually something to help your case, because I think Josh Palmer being there actually matters a lot for Keon Coleman. We talked about this, Scott, where Palmer was a guy when I charted him in the games I looked at for reception, 64.8% outside, 2.2 snaps from the backfield, 33% from the slot. 46.7% off the line, 53.3% on the line. Like, he plays all three positions. And this has been my thing with Keon Coleman. I don't think Keon Coleman stinks. I don't think he's a bad player. But I think as long as he is out there at X receiver only, playing on the outside, and among guys that ran 200-plus routes last year, he had the second lowest slot snap rate only to Rashad Bateman. We got to pump those numbers up too, baby. Come on. Like, he can't, if he's going to do that, he's always going to be volatile. He's always, because he just doesn't separate well enough. But if you move him around, if you move him into the slot, you get him like snaps off the line of scrimmage. There's a path for Keon Coleman. The one thing I do kind of just get tripped up on about like these guys truly breaking out, like top 30 receiver, whatever, but like a true breakout from either. I just don't think the Bills offense wants to run that way. Like, I think they are truly bought into the, which is a good thing for your, the first part of your prediction, winning the damn Super Bowl, which is really what matters. Like, that's what really matters here. But like, I really think that they look at this and Joe Brady, like, this is his philosophy. You go back to his year in Carolina, it's very Sean Payton-esque. Like, we're going to find mismatches and like hyper-specific role players to take advantage of certain things. They don't want to come into a game and have a defense being like, all right, they're going to force feed Keon Coleman eight passes if it's not there. So that's the thing I'm caught up on. But Scott, I want to throw it to you this way. Who do you think is more likely to make Boone look good here, Coleman or Kincaid? I think it's Coleman for the record.
Yeah, I'm going to lean towards Coleman. Remember, he went to college as a basketball player, changed schools, which is not uncommon in today's college game. So I think maybe there's a higher ceiling there. And Justin's point of, we've been spoiled with rookie receivers and young tight ends splashing, but it used to be we thought, you know, third-year breakouts for these guys, second-year breakouts, fourth-year breakouts, whatever it was. So maybe we need to recalibrate that. But you were just outlining what I was going to say about, you think about, since the Packers lost Davante Adams, the most targets anybody's had on that team, and I know I love Tucker Kraft, but nobody's had more than 100, right? Alan Lazard had 100 target season. Last year, nobody got to 80. And I just see a lot of similarities with Buffalo. I mean, in a year where Josh Allen won the MVP, their leading touchdown catch guy was Mac Hollins with 5.
Yeah.
And I just look at this offense, right? Josh Palmer will be probably a hard sell for fantasy. He's going to take 780 yards and like 6 touchdowns off the board. And Dawson Knox is going to take 420 yards and 4 touchdowns off the board.
And snaps away from
the And by the too. Way, they have 3 running backs they like. And by the way, Josh Allen's going to run for anywhere from 10 to 15 touchdowns.
And Elijah Moore breaks out this year.
why not? You know what? If miracles happen in Las Vegas every day, why can't that happen? So I think it might be a case of, yeah, Josh Allen had another great season. Yeah, Buffalo won the AFC East again. Maybe they do go to the Super Bowl. I'd love to see it. The Buffalo Bills fans deserve that. I think that team that went to 4 straight Super Bowls, didn't win one, never gets its fair due because it's just so freaking hard to do that. But I'm just afraid that they don't have – nobody's ever going to be that 8 to 12 target guy off the bus. And so it's going to cap the upside of these players. Because of age trajectory, as Justin mentioned, Coleman's rookie year has kind of an excused absence. Right when he was gaining steam, he got hurt. He's a player we always saw as a little bit of a project, even though he was a second round pick. I'm open to these guys meeting or maybe even beating their ADP. I just think the upside might be a little bit capped because of the way Brady likes to spread things around.
Titus?
Yeah, that's kind of my apprehension with Buffalo in general. Like, I think the winning the Super Bowl is probably the most logical bold take. I don't know. Like, I find myself on the clock and I see Keon Coleman there and I'm like, and then when I compare him to Dalton Kincaid, I just feel like they're going to cannibalize each other. Like, for red zone looks, like, I want it to be Keon Coleman to be that alpha X guy, but like, he just hasn't really, yes, he's young and he has plenty of time to prove it, but like, to your point, Matt, I think they just kind of spread the ball around. So I think it's going to be a pretty equal share. None of them are really going to emerge. But at cost, though, going around where Shakir is in eighth round compared to Coleman in the 10th, I'd much rather have Coleman in the 10th. And I think it's a it's a late round upside swing that could actually pay benefits if he's going to take the leap like Justin expects him to.
There's one other thing we need to talk about, and this was part of Justin's argument about Shakir maybe being slow off the mark. High ankle sprain. It's an injury we always get petrified of. Somebody, I was going to draft Shakir probably proactively before this all this happened. Just give us a state of the union on Shakir right now, how draftable he is for you.
I'm not taking him anywhere. I don't think that there's a huge ceiling, even if he's healthy. He's the kind of player, he's almost like a better version of Pop Douglas, right? Like, he's a guy that's going to get volume, but he's not going to win you your league. Whereas Coleman's somebody, like I said, that I think could put up double-digit touchdowns. A lot of the beat writers have pointed out this year that in practice, he's showing signs of finally figuring out how to position his body and kind of block out the DBs in order to come down with the ball, which would be a huge development. And you wonder, is that happening so much in practice? Is that why all the teammates are saying this is night and day and this guy's showing? There's still going to be inconsistency in both these players. I think Kincaid's been someone too that's very frustrating because he's been close to hitting the last couple of years. As a Bills fan, I can tell you, there are so many plays where I don't understand it, but Kincaid will be open downfield and Josh Allen, of all people, will miss him. And it doesn't make sense because I don't see Josh Allen missing other players the way he's missed Kincaid. I don't know if Kincaid's running the wrong route. I don't know what's happening there. But there's been these instances where it could be a long touchdown. He could have found him in the end zone, and they just don't quite connect.
The Kansas City game, that fourth down with the Kincaid, right? I can still see it in my head, right?
So you would hope that another offseason, maybe they start to figure it out. I see Harmon smiling over there. He's got something.
Well, first of all, I got to give you a tease for the next segment. How dare you besmirch Pop Douglas?
I was going to say, I'm going to throw us to a break here because Colin is in my ear just ripping on Dalton Kincaid. He's his least favorite player in the league. But no, seriously, Boone, I wish you well on this one.
I appreciate you guys indulging me.
I really do wish you well. You know, we wanted to let you like really talk it out here, have the homer hour.
Because, my God,
if your team does not win the damn Super Bowl with Josh Allen, like what is the point of all of this?
I was at a very impressionable age when the Bills were going to the Super Bowl and losing every year. I need this, guys. Come on.
Yeah. Honestly, like we got to be around Boone all year. And like hopefully many, many, many years to come, we're all getting to do this together. I'd like him to be a little bit more of a pleasant person, you know. We don't want him turning too dark too fast if the Bills don't win the Super Bowl this year. So we are going to throw to our final break. When we come back, Boone is not the only big homer here at the table. One of us is going to make a bold prediction about their team right after this. All right, we are back. As I mentioned before the break, Justin Boone is not the biggest shameless homer here. We've got one other person who wants to make a big, bold prediction about their team. So, Scott Pienowski, let's hear it.
How dare you call me a homer? You know, my friend Mark Stopa knew me for like 7 or 8 years, and he didn't know I was a Patriots fan.
Honestly, I'm kind of ashamed of you that you've leaned into this homerism because I've known you now since we've been working together, known you for a long time, been working together since 2018. You've been like the least obnoxious Patriots fan on earth. And now Mike Vrabel's in the building and you're just inhaling all of the optimism. Yeah,
it's Vrabel got me because I just kept seeing him overachieve with those Titans teams that were, you know, solid teams, you know, maybe 9-7, 10-6 type of teams when we still had 16 games, which we still should have in the NFL. So they get Vrabel. They get Josh McDaniels, the classic failed head coach, great coordinator. Drake May, I think, impressed all of us last year, despite, as Charles McDonald would say, a turnstiled offensive line. So Patriots won 4 games last year. Their over-under win total this year is 8.5. So I'm not the only person drinking the Kool-Aid, but I poured some extra Kool-Aid, maybe spiked it a little bit.
Spiked that Kool-Aid, baby.
With an adult beverage because I got them winning 10 games. And I'm folding this into fantasy. I want Drake May. I wanted Travion Henderson until his ADP went to the moon, but I still might say the heck with it and give me one more. Pop Douglas caught 66 passes last year. I think 80-plus this year. I know you're in on Stephon Diggs, which you will be until the year he retires, and you'll be saying he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, he should be a Hall of Famer.
Maybe Kyle Williams has a second half, you know, renaissance. Hunter Henry, I think, is a valuable tight end.
Matt Collins, 8 touchdowns. Why not?
He led the Bills in touchdown catches last year, and Josh Allen won MVP, even though Lamar Jackson had a better statistical season just about everywhere else. I love Josh Allen. I'm not here to mock Josh Allen. He's a terrific player. But the Patriots are going to be this year's Broncos. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be the second-best team in that division. They're going to split with Buffalo. They're going to be a lot better than the Jets. Miami is a crash-landing team waiting to happen. Mike McDaniel won't be there much longer. Tyreek Hill won't be there much longer. And you guys should be with me because we're all in on May.
I know.
We're all in on Vrabel. We're all in, I think, on McDaniels. We know at least the offensive line has to be better, right? And say what you
can't
want about,
be worse.
Say what you want about Pop Douglas. He caught 66 passes last year with horrible play calling. Why can't he catch 80 passes? New England's going to the playoffs. They're going to beat the. I know it's crazy.
Man.
4.5 wins added to their over-under sounds crazy. But their defense actually personnel-wise looks pretty good too. You want a streaming defense for the first week, by the way? I bet they eat Geno Smith's lunch in week one. Patriots are going to be good. They're going to the playoffs. Take any of these things. Maybe they all happen. Maybe 2/3 of them happen. Because I know none of you are going to say anything negative about Drake May.
No.
None of you are going
to
say
that. That's the worst part about this is like I really want Drake May to be good. I really want Stephon Diggs to be good. They drafted Kyle Williams. They're finally going to get a receiver pick, right, Scotty? And I still have to just sit here and let you say these things about New England.
Hey, I dare anybody. to say anything negative about Travion Henderson. He looks fantastic. What's he had beat out? Ramondre Stevenson? Yeah, it'll be a committee, whatever, but it'll be two-thirds Henderson. They love Ohio State guys there. Ramondre fumbles. This is going to be an exciting team. Winning record. I said 10 wins. Whatever. Maybe they go 9-8.
Scott, I've never seen this. I've never seen Scott like this ever.
I didn't say that. Justin, you got to be honest with me. The team that scares you the most in the AFC East is the New England Patriots.
It is the New England Patriots.
Wow.
I do agree. In the AFC East, a couple things on it. I mean, a more realistic take would be 7 or 8 wins. I think that would be a win for them this year, but that's not what this is. This is bold predictions. And I'm actually going to help you here.
Thank you.
Warren Sharp, who does excellent strength of schedule analysis, real
work. Outstanding.
Not necessarily.
Their schedule is so easy. I think John Thompson asked.
This
is your college basketball schedule where you bring in the Division II school and you beat it by 78 points and you give a cut of a check and say, thanks for coming.
Who are you? Who are you? I've never seen you be this way about the Patriots. Again, I've worked with you for all these years. You've always been so level headed. You're like, you know what? I've had a great run as a Patriots fan.
They could stink the rest of my life.
They could stink the rest of my life, and I'd be totally happy. I got to see Brady's years, and now Drake May, Mike Vrabel, and you're just all in.
That's what happened. I fell in love with Drake May. I'll admit it. And you know what? Tell me how that's wrong.
This is great.
Nothing's better than somebody getting to have two great love stories in their life. How
it's
wonderful.
About time the Patriots finally get a coach.
Yeah, you're right.
It's
about time something went right for the damn New England Patriots. I mean, this
now,
is.
Now, if only Bob Kraft could improve like the weight room and the family facilities. Every time they rank the New England facilities, it's like they come in 28th.
Yeah, you know, it's a little
nobody wants to tax
tough times
in Massachusetts.
There, for the Kraft family.
The weather's kind of bad.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Sure.
They're going to be good this year, man. And even if Henderson, man, he's going to be good.
Titus, I mean, just say anything.
Hey, I'm not a Patriots guy at all. I like Drake May, though. Huge Drake May guy.
Sure.
I like DeMario Douglas mainly because he's free. Like 15th round ADP, like he could be the last pick in
your
draft.
Wide receiver 72?
Yeah.
How do you lose with that?
I mean, hey, I think it's a very cheap buy-in. Like, I don't know that I'm as high on Stephon Diggs as some people are at this table. But I think Pop could actually pop and be that guy that Drake May.
When has reception perception ever steered you wrong?
I don't know. Just maybe with the guy that's, I don't know, Pink Panthering it up in the offseason. I don't know. Just Stephon Diggs. I don't know.
I think that's
Boston
when this could go
and
wrong.
Him.
You look at the offensive line.
Hey, that's a good point. Guys can't have fun on a boat anymore.
He can have fun. He had a lot of fun. I wish I was Diggs
Justin,
in a lot of ways.
Justin's right, though. Diggs doesn't really have a floor anymore. Right.
Exactly. Diggs could fall apart with the injury and everything.
Right.
He could totally fall off a cliff. All of that definitely could happen. So, but again, we're trying to be bold here. And I love the fact that Scott's leaning into this. This is great.
I mean, listen.
I think the defense is good too.
I've heard. We're trying to be bold here, but we're also trying to give actionable advice. And if we're giving actionable advice here, Scott, I think it's to draft Drake May, draft Travion Henderson, draft Pop Douglas, and also,
Diggs.
Yes. Yeah, I got it. Again, Matt Collins, why not? What we really need the actionable
track
advice
their kicker
for the people here. The actionable advice the people need to take away from this segment is we need the people in the YouTube comments to implore our bosses to get a watch like live party when the Patriots and Bills play each other. We need that going this season.
And I buried the lead that Justin mentioned with Warren Sharp and the over-unders. Their schedule is just paper thin.
Very, very easy.
Okay.
More?
All right. No more Patriots. No more Patriots.
Moving on.
Scott, real quick, though. your disdain for Tyreek Hill.
Yep.
No concerns over Stephon Diggs being
don't you dare.
I just said
don't you put Tyreek Hill and Stephon Diggs in the same
that
sentence.
Diggs has no floor.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Okay, well, that was actually a pretty mild, bold prediction compared to what Dan Titus is about to say. So you let this one rip.
Yeah, I think this might be. Yeah, I don't know. Buffalo win the Super Bowl. That's, I don't know. You guys just have
they're one of the favorite teams. It's not that crazy.
Look, I'm just going to tease.
I don't know. Got that
I'm going to tease this prediction by saying what Titus is about to say has no chance of happening. But go ahead.
Because it's never happened before.
And it never will.
Our good friends at BetMGM are giving us 1% odds of this happening.
Okay.
Shane is a chance. Travis Hunter will win Offensive Player of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year, and Offensive and Defensive Rookie of the Year. Let me say that again.
Okay.
Travis Hunter will win Offensive Rookie of the Year and Defensive Rookie of the Year. Never happened before. The only reason that I have any semblance of confidence that this might possibly happen. At least we're getting some data in on 11-11 drills that he's actually playing both sides of the ball. Looking at the numbers right here, we got beat writer ESPN's Michael DeRocco said that he has run 173 offensive plays with 168 defensive snaps. I don't know. That looks like a guy that they're being serious about playing two ways. Now, how is he going to get the volume to warrant being a defensive rookie of the year? I don't know. Probably not. There's a lot of good defensive players that were drafted in this class. But if we're looking at the offensive side of the ball, at least things look better in Jacksonville, right? We got Liam Cohen there. He led the Bucs to a top 10 offense last season. Brian Thomas was ridiculous. Even if he gets somewhat of that share, you know, he could be looking at, you know, possibly 1,000 yards his rookie year. Maybe get sprinkling 5 touchdowns there. I see a world where that could happen for Travis Hunter. Defensively, I think it's going to be the hard one because going back, looking at D-backs that have won Defensive Rookie of the Year, you usually have to get around 5 interceptions or you're Sauce Gardner, which I don't think he's Sauce Gardner. He only had 2 interceptions when he won the Defensive Rookie of the Year, but he's a lockdown corner. I don't know that they're going to put Travis in that position. So if he can make plays on the defensive side of the ball, I think he could be in the conversation. It's plus 8,000 if you want to sprinkle something on that. Yeah, not really great odds, but this is a Bold Predictions podcast. Let's have Travis Hunter make more history.
What he would need to do on the defensive side is have some signature game, like a Thursday night game, a Monday night game, a Sunday night game, where like he ran back 2 interceptions for touchdowns. Have a moment that crystallizes him.
Yeah.
I'm just afraid it's a zero-sum game. If he's playing more on defense, it's taking away from his offense. If he's smashing on offense, he's going to sprinkle on the defense. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be hard to be that impactful a player on both sides of the ball because, you know, every rookie class is going to have impactful players on both sides of the ball. Sure. But here's the key part of your prediction, though. Even if he just wins one of them, if we knew right now he was going to be offensive player of the year, offensive rookie of the year, that would mean that he obviously smashes ADP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that is very possible. Like, I have more confidence in him being a great offensive player in year one than a great, like, enough to win defensive player, rookie of the year, because you mentioned that there. I'll finish with mine here. It sticks in the AFC South, and I honestly, this is just bad outline planning by me. Like, there's no way we should be finishing up on, like, this dumb, boring prediction after you guys had all those great ones.
This is a great one.
Tony Pollard and Calvin Ridley are going to combine for 3,000 yards this season. So I think both guys are big-time values at their ADP. They're boring veterans that nobody wants to draft on a team that was 29th in offensive success rate last year. Let me talk about the Calvin Ridley part of this because I think that's the more exciting path here, because this is Cam Ward is also like offensive rookie of the year in my little scenario here. Ridley was so good last year in isolation, and you don't even need to just look at it like that. He was top 10 in yards per out run against man coverage, went over 1,000 yards in a disgusting offense in what was so downfield oriented with Will Levis. Some of Ridley's best routes are like digs and slants, you know, and he was not if he was getting targeted there, which wasn't very often, they weren't accurate targets. Cam Ward, really good at layering the football over the middle of the field, driving through zone coverage. We saw that in the preseason, that throw he had to Van Jefferson against the Falcons. Van just drops it. Calvin Ridley, he's actually known for drops sometimes, but he'll probably catch that more. He'll get a lot more of those targets, okay? So there's that. I think he can get close to like 1,200-something yards as a receiver. And then Tony Pollard, man, like people want Tajay Spears to happen. I think Tajay Spears is an exciting player, but the knock on him coming to the league was injuries, and he has not been able to stay healthy so far. High ankle sprain in the preseason. And Pollard was really good last year. I always talk about like the life cycle of a fantasy running back. I used to say this to Austin Eckler all the time when we did the show together. At one point, you're the guy behind the guy, and then everybody hates the guy. Like when it was Austin, it was, oh, Melvin Gordon, get him out of here. It's like, man, Melvin Gordon's a first-round pick. We were all excited to draft him at one point. It's like, get him out of here. Austin Eckler, let's get him in there. And Tony Pollard's a classic example of this. And in Dallas, it was just constantly, get Zeke out of here. We got to see Pollard. And now this is Pollard's time. He's coming off a good year, rebuilt offensive line, first overall pick at quarterback. I don't see why Pollard can't be like a top 15 type fantasy running back, and nobody wants to take him where he is going.
I think this is really simple. These are two screaming values. Yeah, they're boring. So what?
Yeah.
They both survived Pollard and Ridley last year with horrible quarterback play. All we want Cam Ward to do is keep this offense somewhat on schedule. If he's even like slightly below league average, that's a win. And what if he's good?
Yeah.
Right? We've seen it in recent years. I don't want to compare him to C.J. Stroud and Jaden Daniels. That's an unrealistic expectation. All we're asking Cam Ward is be better than Will Levis, be better than Mason Rudolph. I think he does that. I like the coaching here. Paul and Ridley are screaming. I want you to target these guys in your drafts. Maybe you don't want both of them, so maybe it might be hard for them to get the 3,000. But I think a draft you leave with, where you have one of those two guys, they're going to outkick their ADP. Excellent targets.
I love it. Tennessee Titans not going to be the 29th.
Remember the Titans, baby.
Remember the Titans. Remember how much fun we had on this Bold Predictions podcast. I mean, some real true memories were made here. And yeah, miracles and dreams don't come true in Las Vegas, but we do make memories with our friends along the way. Appreciate you boys for hanging out with us. Thanks to everybody who listened, watched. I mean, just continue. We've had a great summer, great offseason, and now we are marching on towards week one. And on that note, Ray Garvin joins me on Tuesday for the very first data dump of the season. We are going to share 10 stats you need to know for week one, because it is finally here. It's going to be live 5 p.m. Eastern. Until then, we are out.